Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to yet another Charlton Live lockdown podcast. My name is Louis Mendes, and we've got plenty of Alex chat for you to get your teeth into this week. Myself and some of my fellow members of the Charlton Live team discussed the fact that the ownership crisis at the Valley took another dramatic twist this week as the EFL announced an investigation into the club. We also have a walk down memory lane to remember a classic game from years gone by. Carl from the Charlton Athletic Community Trust tells us about this week's Upbeats Day and how you can support the continuation of the superb Charlton Upbeats programme. And we'll also give you a sneak peek of a bonus podcast that's set to be released on Wednesday. But first things first, let's bring in some of the other lads to discuss another confusing week in SE7.
Charlton Live.
Right, so let's see who we've got on the phone this week then. Mr. Tom Wallin's joining us on this week's pod. How you doing, Tom?
Not too bad, thank you.
Yeah, had a good week?
Much the same. Don't know what you want from me, really. Sat in the garden, enjoyed the weather, so that's about as good as it gets, I think, at the moment.
Yeah, every week I ask this question, and every week everyone has the same answer. I ain't done nothing. But there we go. Let's find out what Nathan's been up to.
Yeah, I don't know what you expect, really.
Yeah, well, let's find out what Nathan's been up to this week. How you doing, Nath?
Living the dream, boys.
Yeah. Yeah. You all right?
Yeah, mate. All good, mate.
Getting through it.
Loving life.
Getting through it.
Yeah, look, I'm learning Latin at the moment.
Oh, yeah? Blimey.
Nah.
That'll be useful.
Nothing, mate, just the same old stuff, really. Just usually texting you and Tom, really, just to annoy you.
Yeah.
Really. But apart from that, just surviving like everyone else.
I wish you'd stop sending those pictures. And finally, let's bring in, for his debut since we've gone into lockdown, first time we've heard from him for a while, it's Mark Newbury. How you doing, Mark?
Hello. Yeah, no, I'm all good. I'm fine. What else can you say?
Yeah. How have you found it? It's the first time we spoke to you in a while. What have you been up to? How are the twins?
The boys are good. I've been trying to get them more interested in playing football now. So taking them out.
Is that for when we have to start a new club so we can get some place?
Well, yeah, probably by about 16 years, I'll be about ready. So.
Right, well, it's great to have you on the pod. So, as we know, it's been another crap week, really. A lot more questions than answers. It's tough to say where to start, really, isn't it, Tom? But I thought maybe, you know, towards the end of the week yesterday, Marion Mihail, if that's how you pronounce his name, one of the directors, so-called directors now at the club, answered some questions from the Supporters Trust. The main thing there, you know, people were worried for the immediate future of the club, whether any money's been put in this month, because Tanoon's promised there will be money this month. And they said it still hasn't been in there, and now they're implying it's going to be in the form of a loan. What were your views on that, Tom?
I don't know if we're allowed to use the term show, but I'm going to, and already have, because it's just a complete mess. The whole thing is just... And like, I'm getting to the point now where I'm just sick of it. The pair of them just need to sort this all out. And I said that yesterday on Twitter, that it just feels like the club is just being left to one side while these two... just fight and squabble. And as you say, they'd assured us that this money was coming in. And now it sounds very much like Tanoon's big problem is proving the source of funds. Because two or three times over the last week or so, we've heard that that's the issue, the fact that he's not coming forward with source of funds. And at no point is he explaining why that's an issue, which only leads you to start to get concerned about where that source of funds is coming from. And all the while, the club is still running. The club's still going on week by week. The club still has bills to pay at the end of each week. And until some money comes in, that's obviously going to be just a massive concern. And it's just, to me, it feels like both Matt, in whatever capacity he's still got, and Tanoon and everybody else involved just don't seem to be putting the club first. And even if one of them is going to end up owning the club going forward and we do get the source of funds and we move on, it's just such a horrible start to their time with us, even if in that scenario that the whole thing is just an absolute mess.
Mm, yeah, I mean, obviously, the fact that no money's gone in right now is one concern because of, I think, wages are due to come out, I think, next week, I believe. So that needs to be the case. If it does come in form of a loan, great, then we get past stage one, which is getting wages paid next week. Now, stage two, and perhaps the bigger thing hanging over us in terms of the long term of the club, and this is sort of not just the spat involving Matt Southall and Tanoon Namir, is, of course, the EFL opening this investigation into the takeover of the club. You know, we know currently we're under a transfer embargo because we've been unable to get that takeover ratified because of the lack of source and sufficiency of funding, Nathan. But now that they're going to start to look into this further, I mean, when the EFL start to investigate what's going on, this is when they're going to start to think, right, what other punishments need to be had here? So, I mean, at the best case scenario, you're probably talking points deduction if we can't come out of this investigation shining. And as, I mean, look at what happened to Bury. As these problems mount up and you still don't sort it, you know, these things don't get fixed. Just further down the line, I mean, the very end of this line, as far as the EFL will be concerned, is expulsion from the league. I mean, I'm praying it doesn't come to that, but I think we need to open our eyes now that is actually a very real possibility for us.
Yeah, of course it is. I think there's every allegation, or every allegation, every sort of punishment is you know what, it can be happening. And even if you talk about points deduction, I mean, at the moment in the table we're sitting in the relegation zone anyway. So what could actually happen? They could cancel the season as of now. And let's say they did have relegations. I know Holland haven't, but let's say we go down and they do a points deduction, then we'll be like Bolton and go League One with a minus. Do you know what I mean? Things like that, it's really serious. And to be honest, it's so similar to Tom, really. The whole thing is just getting a bit boring. I think there's more chance of us finding out when this lockdown's finishing before we're going to find out anything through Cholton, you know? And I think the problem is that something's got to give, and at the moment I can't see what's going to give, because you've got two big egos in Tanoon and Matt, who are not letting go. And what one of them has to, if they're not going to be able to work collaboratively, they're going to have to come to a compromise, you know. And it just goes back all the way to the, like you say, the embargo. That's one subject of it all. And it just goes, I was thinking, like, the other day, I think I saw something on Twitter, like, when Matt Southall come out and said that he met the Peterborough chairman about Tony and Madison, what was all that about if he was under embargo? Do you know what I mean? But I mean, yeah, the sanctions that the league can do, especially the expulsion stuff, I'm sitting here thinking, surely, like, they won't be that harsh. But again, we don't really know the full facts of it. It depends what they find, it depends what they dig up, and it just seems a massive mess. And we all thought we were all over that hill, didn't we? We was all cheering that it's all finished and we're all going to go on and hold hands and be happy families all over it from scratch. But obviously that's not proved to be the case.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it, really? Because I've seen some fans sort of saying on social media as such that they feel like the club shouldn't be punished. It should be the people like Matt Southall and Tanoon Namir. But the problem is, Mark, with the way that this the EFL is run, I mean, they can't turn around and say that they are only going to punish two people because they're authority is over the football club. Their authority is over the way the league runs. I mean, sure, they can apply sanctions to those people and there must be some sort of way they can be banned from football, for example. But if they own the shares in a football club, then that football club will have to be punished. And that's why I think some people, you know, we'd all love, I mean, none of us sit here and really think as Matt Southall and Tanoon Namir as Cholton. But the fact is, they are. Legally, they are, if they own the football club, then that's why we're going to be who ends up getting punished.
That's it. If a club gets punished, simple as that. I mean, like everyone else, everyone's gone, well, why should the fans be punished? Why were Bury's fans punished? Why were Bolton's fans punished? But you can't do that. It's just purely for the club. So, you know, I think it's such a difficult situation with actually the legality, especially with the three ex-directors with their legal work as well. on, you know, who comes down to the EFL saying, well, actually, you're still owned by Roland. You know, if we go and ratify the sale, you know, it's hard to say who actually, the physical person who actually owns the club. I mean, Southall said he paid £1 for it, but he was using Namir's money to back that up in the end. So it's quite a confusing situation with what to deal with there.
Yeah, and you're right in saying, I mean, if the ex-directors are successful, I mean, there seems to be, they've taken it to the next stage or so in the last week or so, but I mean, you've no idea how long that's going to take. I mean, that's one way for the long-term future of the club to be secured, obviously, is by that reversal of sale. And then surely Roland owns the club again, and presumably the ground and that come back to being in possession of the club. I guess that's how that works. Then you've got a way forward. But the thing is, with that sort of potential way out, Tom, is you have no idea how long that's going to take, especially with what's going on at the moment, where it's very difficult to meet people and work together towards a name like that.
Yeah, I think looking at the long-term survival of the club, for me, I can't see a way that the club survives long-term with Matt or Tanoon or any of this ESI mob in charge. I think it looks to me like the safest way is to go through the previous owners and directors, who you would hope still have the best interest of the club at heart. We do end up with Roland, because at least then the club and the ground and the training ground are all back under one ownership, which is one thing I don't like about the current scenario. I know they've got this legal agreement apparently to purchase it within 5 years or whatever, but I don't like the fact that that's been split at all. As you say, the concern then is that Roland is going to run it on a pittance because he wants it off his hands, but he's been doing that anyway when the club was playing football. And then, as you say, it's about how quickly he can sell it. Now, I know that people can't meet each other, but you would think he would still have the time to kind of seek people out. You know, everybody who's had to work from home and start to work remotely has seen how much remote technology not only has come on, but how easy it is to use and stuff. So you'd even think he would be able to find someone within his business who can set up a Skype call or something to begin to have those conversations, because those transactions can still take place. So, you know, do I want Roland back in charge long term? Absolutely not. Is that the best scenario that I can see at the moment? Well, unless someone comes flying over the hills with a wad of cash who happens to be a lifelong Charlton fan, I don't really see a better scenario now, because I echo what the other guys have said, that to me, it sounds, you know, crazy because it's so early on, but to me, Tanoon and Matt and everyone else involved have already really burned their bridges, because none of them have shown an ounce of interest in the club, or not legitimately. I know Matt came out and said what he said at the start, and Tanoon's preaching what he wants to preach, but none of them have put their money where their mouth is and proven that the club is their priority. And until they do, I don't really see how anyone can have any faith in any of them.
Yeah, that's one of the major frustrations at the moment. I mean, in terms of a next step then, Nathan, what do you think will be the outcome over the course of the next little while? Because, I mean, if it goes to the stage where, I mean, we're still, well, only a few days from the end of April now, what, we've probably a week left. Tanoon's promised that, well, sort of said he's going to put money in, possibly in a loan now, because I guess he's worried that the sale is going to be reversed. But then if it does, who owes the money to Tanoon then after that? I mean, that's going to be another web in this absolute confusion that's holding the club back at the moment. I mean, what do you think will happen next? Because if that money doesn't go in, then, I mean, would the administrators be called in? Is that an option? I can't imagine it would happen that quickly, but that's an outside option if we stay in this position for a while.
Yeah, I think obviously once it comes to the fruition that the entity itself cannot pay its creditors and pay its liabilities, then it will become a conversation where, you know, the administration may be an option. But I think Tanoon will probably put the money in, but like you say, it's whoever then if it's unpicked by the EFL and it turns out that he's not the legal owner per se, you're not going to have Roland, who's going to be, because what's going to happen is if you have that loan, you're going to have the ball that are currently at Charlton who have signed and agreed a loan from, I assume it's going to be from ESI or from Panorama Magic, right? So if Roland's the new owner, he's going to say, well, it's not my liability, I didn't sign for that. And it's true. So again, like, it's true what you say, what happens there. But I mean, in terms of the likely outcome, I honestly think that The EFL unpick it. I think it probably will go back to Roland.
Yeah, it's not up to the EFL. The EFL can't unpick the deal. They can just say that it's not that they haven't passed, and then say just empire. They can put on their own punishments. Then they can't unpick the deal themselves.
Yeah, no, but I mean, what I meant was in terms of, because I think if you go and buy a house or something, you've got to prove where your money's come from, right, or something. And I think I'm not saying that the money that he's not proving isn't legal. I just think that the money he's probably got or said that he's got is probably tied up in other interests in football, in my opinion. Do you know what I mean? That's what I think it might, in my opinion, where it could be. Because I think otherwise, why is it so difficult to prove where the money's come from? And that's what I don't understand. It's not that difficult if you can prove to a bank, whether you go buy a house or if you do anything, you can prove where your money's come from. You can, because it's all electronic now. So that's where I think it's come unstuck. I think the only way it's going to be is whoever investigates it or who unpicks it, whoever that may be. And then there probably will be a points deduction. I honestly think that. But like Tom said, unless something comes out of nowhere and he finds the proof, which I hope he does. Don't get me wrong. I hope Dunoon does provide the proof or satisfy all the needs. And then we can all just crack on and forget about it and just, focus on getting back to football. But I can't see it. I don't know if that's just being me negative, Nora, but
we're nearly 6 months down the line now, aren't we, from November when this sort of deal was first announced as such and when it was in its making still. So, I mean, if he hasn't done it now, why not? And surely he would have done it now if he was able to.
Well, exactly. This is what I'm saying.
I mean, also this week, Mark, we've seen Tanoon and Matt Southall ended up on Talk Sport during the week, which was, probably a distraction more than anything. This is one of the things that I think, myself included, especially while I'm not working, I'm just sitting at home bored, looking for distractions. This is one of the things we're all getting sucked into now, is when Tanoon or Matt make some sort of announcement via the press or whatever, all of a sudden we're all over it. But really, I mean, it's fairly irrelevant what they're saying now. I mean, Tanoon went on to TalkSport, said he'd responded to the EFL's request when they started talking about this inquiry into the club. Said he's happy to satisfy the EFL tests. Said it was a problem that EFL wanted to know the source of the money, but he says he believes he's provided everything for them. But like I say, he's been saying that for a while now, hasn't he? Slagging off Matt Southall a bit, as we've seen. And then just talking about, everyone's got to stick together. And then Matt Southall came on, sort of refuted a few claims, spouted a bit of rubbish about the flat, for example. Talking about Nimir not putting his money in, which we all know already about at this moment in time. And again, really added absolutely nothing to the equation as to how the club's going to be safe going forward. I mean, it's got to a stage now where I don't care how much Matt and Tanoon don't like each other. Tanoon, I think it was Rick Everett put in the Voice of the Valley this week, Tanoon seems to be the person in possession of the ball in terms of who could possibly do something to sort the club out at the moment. So I don't want to hear Tanoon slagging off Matt, because trust me, Tanoon's people have been leaking all sorts of rubbish to us again about Matt Southall. When I turn around and say, what about the source and sufficiency? They go very quiet. So I don't care about this argument between the two of them. I just want this sorted now. And that must be the way it's got to go forward, surely, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, it did seem very childish. I mean, I've got a feeling Matt Southall probably regrets going on TalkSport. He thought he could go in and sell a few cans of snake oil. And luckily, Simon Jordan's there and he doesn't buy it. But you're right, it just seems churlish and childish as well between the two of them. And it's, how much one's going to dig their heels in over the other. Like you say, I think, Namir's got the ball, but Matt's going to say, right, if you want to get rid of me, you're going to have to pay me off, to get me out of anything, because he keeps saying about all the shares he's got, and it is confusing. But like I say, I don't know, is Roland sitting with absolutely no money in his account for the club? It's like Nathan said about the house thing. It's right, you have to, you can't move into a house until you've put the money into someone else's account. So, in effect, we've got squatters in the boardroom as such. So,
yeah, squatters is one thing I'd call them. So what else do we see this week? So Matt, on the day after, was it a day or two after that the two of them were on TalkSport speaking to Jim White, all of a sudden Jim announced that he had some big revelation. And it was such a weird one. He sort of said that Matt Southall's company, ESI, which at the start of that sentence didn't even make any sense, had decided that they will terminate the appointment of IPS Law, the company used by Tanun Namir inside Charlton to prevent Charlton from becoming another Bury. Now, it was just the merest of digging into this story. I mean, even what Jim said didn't make any sense at the time, but the merest of digging into this story. So the fact that he said it's ESI's, Matt Southall's company, ESI, obviously set alarm bells ringing. IPS Law is the law firm that Chris Farnell, the lawyer, is with. Now, Chris Farnell is the man who was at Bury when they were expelled from the league, and was a lawyer at one point for Matt Southall. Matt Southall was unable to pay him. I think owed him something in the region of about 10 grand. Tanun Namir now uses Chris Farnell. Clearly, Farnell and Southall don't get on. But I mean, the way this transpired, I heard from good sources that basically what happened is an email was sent to the club's senior staff, like SMT, and basically telling them from the Southall camp, and I'll let you guess who's left in that camp, and basically saying that, oh, Charlton aren't going to use IPS Law anymore. And the SMT all looked at it like, well, this person has no authority over us. That decision has not been made. Just ignore this. But that email was copied into TalkSport and just read out by Jim White. So it's baffling that there was no checking of that story done, because, and, you know, as I put on Twitter at the time, it doesn't mean much at all, that email. It was just another example of the games being played, Tom, by both sides, which is so frustrating. When, as I say, you know, it's fiddling whilst Rome is burning.
Yeah, it's not just frustrating, it's completely pathetic. The fact that he thought he was ever going to get away with that, and I know it got read out on TalkSport, so to some extent he might think he's got away with it, but any fan with half a brain is going to recognise that it's absolute nonsense, and you've just got to hope that there's enough of those fans around to shut down the other fans who are, you know, hanging on to every word that they get spun because it makes them feel important. And you know, we said it in our Twitter group the other day that, unfortunately, an organisation like TalkSport, you know, they're a commercial radio station. All they're really looking for is to get listeners, you know, and to make money. So if they get a story that they know is gonna get people listening, you know, and they have it on what they deem good authority, then they're going to read it out. And it goes back to what we've all said, you know, and you said it earlier. I'm just sick of it now. The pair of them, it's so childish, it's so pathetic, and they're just leaving the club to rot. And like you say, Tanun has got the power in terms of the finances, we're led to believe. And yet, you know, the questions and answers that went on the site the other day say he's not prepared to do anything with the club until Southall leaves. Well, there's a good chance that Southall, whatever position he's in now, isn't going to go away, and certainly not going to go away easy. So is Tanun therefore just going to let it run its course until the club no longer exists? Like, someone has got to grow up in all this and got to put a stamp on it and got to sort it out, because when you buy a football club, that's what you have to do. And at the moment, there's just absolutely no sign that either of them are doing it.
Yeah, I mean, there was that weird situation, wasn't there, Nath, where Southall was on Twitter inviting fans to join some sort of Zoom conversation. Similar to what we're doing here, obviously. I mean, it'd be people talking online about it, but with Matt Southall. And it's funny, you know, I was on the phone to someone at the time when I saw those tweets coming up, and I said to the person I was speaking to, I said, oh God, look what Matt's asking. And then it suddenly dawned on me, because all of a sudden people were putting my name forward. I was like, oh no. So I thought, if I just ignore this, hopefully it'll go away. But then 2 days later, Matt did actually DM me, inviting me to join. And I just said, I have no plan in joining this conversation, because, I mean, it would have been clearly a waste of time. We've seen with some of the conversations on TalkSport this week that nothing Matt says can really hold any ground at the moment. There's nothing he has to say that's worth listening to now.
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, I saw it on Twitter and that, and it made me laugh a little bit, because it was, obviously, he got absolutely roasted by Simon Jordan, because he couldn't even, just Jordan trying to explain the concept of cash flow and how it works in business in terms of age and your liabilities and your commitments for a football club. It's quite funny because Matt said he couldn't answer the question, so I thought it was hilarious. He done that, in my opinion, he done that because he got showed up on TalkSport. And I mean, you can go around and ask people to come and join your Zoom call who are probably going to not pose the real questions that need answering, the real diggy questions, just the general, you know, the general chit-chat stuff. And he just wanted to be seen to be the nice guy, like he always has done. But for me, I just think some people just need to see through it all and just be like, do you know what? Let's not get involved with a tit for tat, like Tom says, because it's just getting boring now. I don't really care about the Range Rovers and the Beeps anymore, to be honest with you. I just want, like Tom said, just get sorted out. Someone take a bit of, go up a little bit. This is how we got to do it, and then crack on. Do you know what I mean? But I mean, he's always going to be on Twitter. He's always going to pipe up, and then but people seem to just believe everything that's gospel, and that's what I think's making it poisonous. Because I think it's coming to a stage now where you've got people, if you can call it this, you've got Team Nemo and Team Southall, and you've got people taking sides, and you're causing a massive divide between fans again. And that's what I'm worried about, is that you're going to have people that believe two different sides, and then they start arguing on Twitter, and it gets a bit nasty. And it's like, listen, we all want the same thing. Let's not try and make the dirty laundry even dirtier in public. Just let it go. And then, but I think that's why I'm getting a bit disenchanted with it all at the moment. And I think after the TalkSport thing, I read the stuff from Marion Mahal yesterday, which is, I think, to be fair, that's quite a good thing for him to do. It provides a little bit of clarity, but mate, I mean, with the Zoo thing, you're going to have everything. This won't be the last one, Matt, and he'll crack on, and he won't let it go. And but someone has to, and there, someone's got to give.
Yeah, I mean, we saw some quotes from the Supporters Trust a couple of times this week. I mean, they were. Severely worried, and they have even put themselves at the very existence of the football club is under threat. I mean, they've got involved with asking questions. I mean, this is one thing I've seen people moaning about, which not really something I get on board with, because I mean, and I know this is something that people put to jerk. I mean, the amount of times when Charlton lost, I asked Lee Bowyer, and he said, "Oh, actually, we gave everything." And people say, "Oh, why didn't you tell him?" Because, like, well, there's no question that will all of a sudden make Lee Bowyer change formation. So, like, people seem to think that just by asking a question aggressively, then all of a sudden you're going to fix everything. You don't. That's not how it works. And the Trust have been putting forward questions, and, you know, they have been getting, like you say, some answers. But unfortunately, just because you don't like the answers doesn't mean the question was wrong. I mean, you can only ask questions of people, Mark, and then it's up to them to say what they're going to say. And if we don't like the fact that, you know, still, Nima hasn't put any money in, ESI haven't put any money in, there's nothing the Trust can do about that other than ask what's going on. And that's one thing I think where people are getting a bit carried away with, just trying to slag off supporters groups because things are going wrong. Unfortunately, the people the buck stop with are the people who currently own the football club.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, you're trying to keep away from social media, but you have a lot of time on your hands at the moment. And I saw something yesterday which says that this is all Card's fault. And I'm thinking, is it Card's fault? It's the finger pointing, and the amount of smug people go, "Oh, I told you in January about this lot," and thinking, "Did you? You know, well done, you get a special badge, but it doesn't achieve anything now." I mean, it's a unity thing. We've been pushed down before, and if we get a points deduction, if we get dropped down to a division, as long as there's still a club here, that's the thing. I mean, That's the important thing. If we start next season in League One with minus 12, fine. You know, it's I'm not happy with it, but at least we have a club. You know, and that's the thing. As a bottom line is, and it's right, there are divisive people who just want to, who would start an argument in an empty room, and, you know, how they're much more of a fan, and why don't you ask this? If you don't want to answer a question, someone will just say, "Well, legally, I can't talk about that at the moment." And that's it. That's done with. I mean, it's, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? They don't, you know, like I say, they don't actually have to give an answer. You know, we are getting some things back, but, you know, as a fan, all you can almost do is, it's like you're watching it through a chain link fence. You want to go closer, but you can't, because you've got to leave it until someone decides, right, this is what's going to happen. Someone's seen you up the totem pole is going to say, right, this is what's happening. And like I say, unfortunately, all we can do really is discuss it in the most at least we have a forum here where it's civil. I mean, and there's too much uncivility to be between Charlton fans online at the moment, and that's what's depressing.
Yeah, it's getting a...
I think I said it the other day, didn't I, that I think for me, what's happening on Twitter, and you can read into Twitter what you want, and the sort of people that are on there, but obviously we all are, but I know it can be a place where people lash out. But for me, I'm giving some fans the benefit of the doubt and putting it down to the fact that they are scared about the existence of their club. And because they're scared, they are choosing to lash out any way they can in a way to try and look like they care. And if that is the case, then I get it. And, you know, it is a difficult time for all of us as fans of the club. But as I put on the other day, it's important that we all stick together, because Mark's exactly right. You know, we are going to come out at the end of this in some form. We hope it's still with the Charlton that we know. But whatever form we come out of it, that club or whatever it is that still exists is going to need the fans to pull together. So it's just so important to be able to do that. And as I say, at the moment, I think it's that people are scared, and from the looks of what we've read, rightly so. But I think it's about not directing that frustration and that fear towards other fans, because we all, at the end of the day, we all want the best interests of the club, right? And we're all on the same team.
Excellent stuff. Right, I think that is where we should leave it for this week's chat. Still got a little bit more to come up on the pod, of course. But I'm going to say thank you then to Mark, to Tom and to Nath for joining me this week. And I hope you guys have a good week.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound. And you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cullen trying to take his man on. Chip ball back across. Bowers there. Pierce is there. Bowers the header. And it's Charlie.
Yes! Oh, it's in!
Oh, he's got it! Oh, Patrick Barr! You absolute German beauty!
Woo! Dreamland!
Charlton have scored! With seconds remaining!
We've done it all!
Get in!
Come on!
What a time to be a hero!
Here at Wembley!
Oh my word! Oh my word!
Charlton Live.
Right, I promised you a trip down memory lane, so let's go back to the 28th of September 2003, when Liverpool's trip to the Valley would prove a special afternoon for a perennially young striker.
Oh, what a great ball that is! And slid home. Vladimir Smitsa on the end of a brilliant through ball. Liverpool take the lead, a quarter of an hour gone. Here's a chance for Lisby against Dudek, and he's taken it. Half an hour gone, Charlton are level.
Absolutely superb finish, some sloppy play really from Liverpool. It's a fabulous first touch from Graham Stewart, the flying Lisby, who made a superb run forward. The keeper has certainly committed himself very early indeed, and very similar in many respects to the goal from Vladimir Smitsa. He finds the perfect chip over the goalkeeper into the back of the net, and even Paolo can celebrate.
Now Jensen delivers the corner. Hartlett got it well, so did Bishkan. Headed back in by Fish, and out by Heskey, and then back in by Bartlett. From one down, lead Liverpool by 2-1.
Well, it's party time at the Valley at the moment.
Heskey was being held, I thought, and so did referee Styles. More significantly, it's a penalty. 2-2. 8 goals in 8 games for Michael Owen.
Just look how open this football match is. It's incredible, isn't it? One moment Liverpool attacking, the next moment Charlton are at their throat.
There they go with Lisby. What a run.
An open game. One moment Liverpool were attacking, and the next minute Charlton may well have got the winner. And how fitting and deserving it may well have gone to Kevin Lisby.
It's all down to Mr. Styles now. How long we have left? And there's the answer. Kevin Lisby's first hat-trick of his senior career has produced a memorable win for Charlton Athletic.
Lisby's stunning 83rd minute winner secured his first ever hat-trick and a memorable victory over Liverpool, one of the Addicks' best during the Premier League era. Unfortunately, Lisby wouldn't score again that season, with his campaign curtailed through injuries shortly after. The Addicks, though, would go on to finish 7th, their best ever season in the Premier League.
Charlton Live.
Now, this week has been designated Upbeats Week by the Charlton Athletic Community Trust. Normally, hundreds of fans would have made the walk from the training ground to the Valley today to raise money for the Upbeats, but the circumstances have clearly changed due to the lockdown. Plenty of you would have been out already to support the Charlton Upbeats in a different way this week. I caught up with Carl from the Community Trust to find out a little bit more about what has been planned for this week.
The normal walk was planned every year. We have all those supporters that are brilliant and come out and engage in the event and do the walk. And obviously, with the restrictions and lockdown, that's not going to be possible this year. So we were really keen that the Upbeats project sort of didn't go unnoticed during this period, and especially for the boys and the families. You know, we felt it was important to still shine a light on the project. So what we've asked people to do is to sort of walk a mile, a minimum of a mile, or whatever they can do really, this Saturday, still in sort of aid of the Upbeats programme. And I think a lot of people have come forward and said they're going to do a bit more. Some people have talked about doing a 10K run, but really the distance doesn't really matter. It's just the fact that I think collectively there's going to be groups of people that are doing something on Saturday that is in aid of the Upbeats, is thinking about the Upbeats project, obviously raising funds for the programme, which is great, and it just allows them and the project to be the spotlight really for Saturday, as they would have been obviously if the normal season was underway as it was. But yeah, so it's going to be different, but you know, all in all, the Upbeats project is going to be the benefit from this for sure.
Yeah, of course, because it's one of the projects that the Trust do that certainly caught the imagination of the fans over the last few years. So I'm sure you're expecting you'll get plenty still getting involved on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it never fails to amaze me, to be honest. Whatever's happening football-wise, you know, obviously, you know, there's been some difficult seasons and times in recent years at Charlton, but the fan support for the Upbeats has never wavered or been deterred by any of that. And in fact, it tends to do the opposite. They tend to sort of galvanise and realise that the Upbeats is part of the Charlton family. It's an extremely positive aspect of the club and trust that's come together. You know, we all know that historically the Upbeats project was only ever made possible by the generosity of the supporters and how they voted it. And we got the funding and they've supported it ever since. And I think, yeah, it's just something. There's nothing negative about the Upbeats projects at all. You know, whether it's the way the supporters come forward and support it every year, you know, the lads themselves and the families, you know, the whole project, it's just a good feeling. Everything surrounding it, whether it's them going on the national tournament or the Upbeats Day, obviously, at the Valley every year, it's just a win-win for everybody. And I think, to be honest with you, talking to staff and myself, I know I've missed a lot of our projects in the last few weeks, but the Upbeats in particular, I can't wait to see them all again and their families. And, you know, I know they feel the same and the supporters will be the same. I think we all want to raise some money, make sure the project's there again in whatever time we can get back up and running. So it's just a win-win for everybody, I think.
Yeah, and you mentioned there, of course, that the fans' generosity has helped keep the project going over the last few years. I mean, what target are you guys looking at for donations, and what sort of stuff would the money be spent on?
Well, so what we normally do is we normally set a target every year, which is based on what the project obviously costs to run. And obviously that includes the trips that we run for the families and the national festival that we go to. So there's lots of trips, or three or four main trips that we run a year for the upbeats. Obviously, with the way that the summer's going, that's been scaled down. The project's not currently running the trips. It looks like the national festival has been put back till October at the earliest. Their Belfast trip has been cancelled, unfortunately, already. So we know that actually that we're going to do the walk again next April and on a bigger scale, hopefully. But we just wanted to do something this year and set a realistic target that meant that if we come back in August, September, we can still put some really good events on for the families and the upbeats, still run session through till next April, and then set another target for there. So I think we're hoping to raise £10,000. And if I'm honest, I had a look this morning, and it's no surprise to me, we're not far off already. You know, people have really got behind it this week. Some of the boys have been involved in promoting it themselves, which is great. And the target looks like really healthy already. So, again, the fans and supporters of the upbeats haven't let us down. They never do.
Yeah. And you mentioned that you've been missing some of the lads whilst whilst we've all had to sort of stay away from each other. I mean, how have they been keeping themselves busy? I've seen them sort of helping to set the challenges for the supporters on Twitter as well with some of their football videos. What else have they been up to?
So we've had a WhatsApp group running for years, which has obviously got parents and carers on it. It's our way that we communicate quickly to the families. But I think what we did was a few weeks ago, one of the boys came up with the idea actually, and his mum, and they said, look, can we set up an upbeat only WhatsApp group, which has been brilliant. And obviously a couple of us are on it just to ensure that we police it a little bit. And it's been amazing the way they've been sending each other messages, songs, cake baking, little messages to each other, and just words of support and encouragement to each other, because I know it's been challenging for not only the upbeats themselves, but obviously for their families. The vast majority are sort of isolating completely in terms of not going out, and that's challenging. But they have got their family unit, you know, they're all together. So it's been wonderful to see some of the stuff that's been coming through, and really entertaining as well, as they always are. And I think what we've done is we've just really got them behind the push this week, and we've not had to twist their arms to do that. They've been sending in their own version of LA, LA, LA. I think I've seen a few of those this week, which has been brilliant. All done in different styles, which is great. And also, as you said, I think we've been, our football and sports development team have been setting tasks. The first team have been involved in now, I know that. And we thought it'd be nice for this week to have the upbeat setting some of those challenges, which has gone out to the public, you know, people that follow our Twitter feeds, and we've been having young people sort of trying to emulate what the boys have been trying to do, and competitions run. So it's been brilliant. It's been a great week. Been a lots of it. The club have been amazing. Tom and Ollie, the way they've supported it in terms of promoting it, and there's been so much material this week. It's been difficult to catch up with it all, if I'm honest. But yeah, really good.
And of course, away from the upbeats, the community trusts play such a big part in the local area. To so many people, and obviously I guess in a lot of your projects would have had to sort of wind down during this period, but I know there's been plenty of stuff going on. You mentioned you were out and about doing deliveries today. I mean, what else have the trust been doing during this time to try and keep things going for people in the local community?
It's been a really strange period, because obviously a lot of our projects are sort of local authority commissioned or funded via the Premier League, for instance, via Kicks, and, you know, various projects. And what we've had to do, and actually we've been really sort of proactive in doing it, is changing our approach. We work with lots of vulnerable people throughout the year, whether it's for our mental health programs or what our amazing health strand deliver, you know, in terms of support to the local community. And those communities stretch from Roeborough, Greenwich into Bexley, and also all the way down into Kent and Thanet. You know, we've had some really proactive stuff down in Ramsgate over the last few weeks. But we've just mobilised really to sort of see and talk to the council, see where we can be of best support to them and our local communities. And currently we're running the community hub, which basically all of those that are sort of in need and need or a crisis, they will come through to those lines. So our health team are managing that brilliantly, and a lot of us have just changed our roles, you know, to become delivery drivers, running essentials out to the families that are in need. We've been linking in with the Shortbreaks teams, Roborough, Greenwich and Bexley, because we normally work all year providing sort of respite programmes to families who have kids with disabilities. So now we've sort of changed that to almost saying, now, what do you need brought in? We'll deliver you, do your shops for you. You know, we've been in Sainsbury's, as does most of the last month, doing shops for people and delivering it to them, and it just makes it a bit easier. So yeah, it's been a really brilliant reaction from all our staff, which isn't a surprise. You know, we have some brilliant staff here, and they've just been very flexible and done what they've needed to do to make sure that we're the best we can be for the local communities. And hopefully, you know, that won't be for too much longer, but we're prepared to do it for as long as it takes, really.
Charlton Live.
Now, at the top of the show, I mentioned that we'll give you a sneak peek at a bonus podcast that will be released in midweek, and it's one I'm sure you will not want to miss.
In 62, I was starting to get into the reserve side, and I had a habit of scoring goals, and I was playing in the reserves. So coming up at the end of that 61-62 season, I was offered the chance to be professional, which was really quite an amazing acceleration from nowhere almost to becoming a chance to be offered the job.
And your dad must have been very proud of you at that time, Keith, from that initial trial and then going through the injury and then becoming a pro at Charlton. That must have been a special moment for the family as well.
It was, and particularly my father. My dad was a great influence on never giving up, carry on, keep working hard, and things will turn out for the best, or the best you can possibly get.
On Wednesday, in collaboration with the Charlton Athletic Community Trust, we'll be releasing the first of three parts of an engaging chat between Steve Sutherland and Mr. Charlton himself, Keith Peacock. Keith shares some fascinating insight into his long affiliation with the Addicts as a player, assistant and caretaker manager and ambassador for the club. It's one not to be missed. So that will be released on Wednesday, but until then, I hope you've enjoyed this week's pod. We'll be back with another regular Charlton Live podcast next weekend. Goodbye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.